Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Run to Daylight Football Funcast with your host, Todd Burrows.
Welcome to the latest installment of the Run to Daylight podcast. I'm your host, Todd Burrows. You can find me on Twitter at Todd from PA. I'll be joined in a minute by Hilo, Mark Garcia, at Hilo FF. He is got a lot of exciting things going on, which we'll talk about at the end of the podcast. But today we're here to talk about DraftKings finally coming out with best ball, with my inability living in Pennsylvania to play on underdog. My tournament best ball is going to DraftKings. I will max out the $3, and depending on my motivation level on day to day, somewhere probably 20 or 30, I'm guessing, by the time the season starts, of the millionaire maker at $20. If they had come out earlier, I probably would have gotten, I might have done 100 of those. So there's still a few things that aren't on the app. If you are a fan of the DK Best Ball, let them know about draft boards. Let them know about making it easier to see rosters and some of the other things. There's a few things that need, that Underdog does have from what I'm told. Again, I can't play there, but my regular best ball, I'm still playing on the FFPC. And speaking of our friends at the FFPC, best ball still going on. The main event is going on with slow drafts. Fast drafts are coming soon. And you can still play Dynasty football. Dynasty right now is probably one of the biggest advantages out there with the unknown about the 2020 season. There are, and without knowing much about 2021 rookies with the college season in trouble, if you are good at that, Dynasty is a great way to play. Go to myffpc.com to play today. Mark, welcome back to the show, my friend. Okay, it happened again. Mark got signed out. Mark, can you hear me now?
I got you now. I've been here the whole time.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, but your mic was turned off, and I didn't turn it off. And you, Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Hey, it's good to be here, man. Long time no talk, so excited to be chatting again.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. Mark and I will be working together again this year on one-week season. I've told JM to win that I don't know, especially with all the football guys' tourneys I'm in, that I'm going to be able to do every Saturday night. Mark is pretty busy too, but we're going to try and give you as many weeks together as we can. On weeks when we can't, I may do alternative projects, you know, maybe interview people from the world of DFS, things like that. Or do an earlier pod before JM comes out with his final article. We also might do Saturday during the day and not wait for the grid. So it's not going to be a grid podcast per se like last year, Mark, but I hope you and I get to do at least 10 to 12. If the NFL season goes the full season, I hope we get to do at least 10 to 12, and we'll play it by ear about doing every week.
Yeah, for sure. As long as I've got the time and the motivation will be here. It's just about getting us together and giving us a time where we can sit down and chat. But yeah, it should be good, man.
Yeah, well, we'll hold our normal Saturday night 8 EST time period open. But I know this year you're West Coast, so that's 5 p.m. for you. So I might be able to do it a little later, like 9 some weeks, but it's hard for me to stay awake, honestly.
Yeah, no, actually, with the family life, that actually works out better for me. So I can on Saturdays or whenever we're doing these, I can get the kiddos dinner early, send them up to watch TV or something while we sit down for an hour, hour and a half and knock it out, and then I can go get them to bed. So it might work out.
Yes, 7 is even better for me Eastern time, to be honest. I do prayer on Saturday nights at 8, and I missed most of it last year. So, but we'll see. We'll play it by ear. And but today we're here to talk about DraftKings best ball product, and I'm really enjoying it. There's a few things missing that used to that are on some of the other sites, but we're not going to focus on negatives. So the first thing I want to talk about is the fact that it uses all the DK scoring and settings that we're used to. So I want to talk a little bit about roster construction and how it's different than the FFPC, i.e., other sites as it relates to starters, one quarterback, 2 running backs, 3 wide receivers, 1 tight end, and a flex position. Am I missing anything with that?
Nope.
All right.
And, it's interesting with the 3 wide receivers. I really like that. And the reason why is because the game itself has gone more running back centric, in the sense that running backs are pushed up the draft boards for the past probably 3 years now when looking at best ball. So with the running backs being pushed up the board, it's nice and adds a little competitiveness that you haven't had to think about until now with the 3 wide receiver spots where you have to start 3. Now that affects your roster construction a little bit, but what it does for me really is moves some wide receivers up my board. And we'll talk about that here shortly.
Well, and it's funny because you haven't been playing, but I have. And one of the things I did want to talk about, and we'll get to it in a little bit, is, you know, where the positions are going and how it affects things. But I will say that I am much more likely in general not to go 0 wide running back, but I have done a couple 0 running backs, where I haven't taken a running back to the 5th round. And just in general, because wide receiver, all right, I'll just get into it and say wide receivers go early. On the FFPC, where you only have 2 starting wide receivers and 2 flexes each week, you normally can get really good wide receivers. You know, the guys who are going in the 10th, 11th, and 12th rounds on FFPC are really going in the 8th, 9th, and 10th. And with 3 starters, I mean, to me, that means I want 6 good wide receivers and 1 or 2. So let's just talk about roster construction. So for me, with 20 players, Mark, base formation for these is 3 quarterbacks, 6 running backs, 8 wide receivers, and 6 and 3 tight ends. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's going to be really your place to deviate from. And the reason to deviate is if you go heavier in one place versus another. Typically, you are going to want 3 quarterbacks. There's a reason, and sometimes where you would drop down to 2, but I would not advise that this year with all the unknowns with COVID and everything that that's going to induce. You know, if you lose a quarterback to COVID and your other quarterback is on bye when you only took 2, now you're taking a fat goose egg. So a little bit more propensity to be a little bit more safe with roster construction this year. So the 3 quarterbacks and 3 tight ends is definitely a place to deviate from. And I would really only deviate from those if you are really taking 2 of the top 5 of the position, which almost I am never doing. So where you're really going to tinker in those roster constructions is the 6 running back and 8 wide receivers. That's, again, really your place to deviate from. Reasons to possibly go 5 and 9 there, or I probably wouldn't take seven running backs ever. So either six running backs, eight wide receivers, or the 5 and 9 if you really load up on running backs early.
I have 1 7 running back team so far, and it was one where I didn't start running backs until late, and there was a seventh guy that was better on the board than anybody else. And I think that was the one draft that I had didn't draft three tight ends, that I had two good ones. But I am in, or no, I think I forget if it was a tight end or quarterback that I had two. In general, I think, you know, the biggest thing to talk about here is that it's 20 rounds instead of 18, which I like better anyway. And with COVID is absolutely necessary, because you want skill to determine these drafts, not injuries, and certainly not a virus. And you could lose a lot more players, but in general, having 20 over 18 adds some interesting strategy to me, Mark. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. I think 20 is a necessity, just like you said, especially for this year. And really any other year, I like 20 over 18 to begin with anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, so for me, you know, we're going to talk about how to use those extra two rounds. For me, one of them is absolutely, and I would do this whether it was a COVID or not. I really think, you know, based unless you're, you know, we're talking about the tournaments here, right? So I'm talking about, but before we talk about the tournaments, I do want to talk about one other thing. And that's how this is a full PPR site. Unlike Underdog is a, you know, which is run by the people who ran Draft, and it's the same format as FanDuel with half PPR. So how does it being full PPR change the dynamic for you, Mark, in a best ball?
Yeah. So, I mean, it really, it's about the positional variance. And what I mean by that is running back versus running backs, and wide receivers versus wide receivers, et cetera, et cetera. And the bigger wrinkle is because of that DraftKings scoring with the over bonuses. So the 3 points for over 300.
Let's just stick to the PPR conversation first, and we're going to do a whole segment on the bonuses.
All right. Papa Bear has spoken, guys. I got to be quiet. No, I'm just
sorry.
Kidding. But yeah, the PPR versus half PPR, it's again, it's just positional variance. So guys who are volume running backs, but really we can't expect much out of the passing game, guys that come to mind, you know, DMO, so David Montgomery, he would have been a guy that I would have been more, had a higher propensity to draft in half PPR than full PPR, because really what we're looking for out of our first 7-8 rounds, we're looking for upside with floor. So really in a full PPR setting, David Montgomery, for example, is really only on that floor side of things, where his pass game involvement isn't going to give him the weekly ceiling that we'd like to see there.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for me, a full PPR does two things. With three starting wide receivers, again, it pushes the wide receivers up the board. And for me, the way I'm handling that is I talk a lot about tiebreakers in best ball, whether it's buys or stacking. Well, for me, in the first 5 or 6 rounds, if I've got a running back and a wide receiver close, I'm taking the wide receiver. The one thing you don't want in any draft, and it's something I've been, you know, kind of banging the table about a little bit this year, is the fact that you don't want to get heavy at a position and then the values that are left only be at that position. And so to stay, you know, at even value between running backs and wide receivers, I think you always want to have one more wide receiver than running back, ideally. Now, you don't drop a tier to take, you know, a wide receiver over a running back. If you've got a running back a tier higher than a wide receiver, don't drop down. But for me, Mark, if I've got a wide receiver and a running back real close, it's very easy for me in the top 5 rounds, especially with running backs' propensity to get injured, to shore up my wide receivers. That's one thing. And the other thing is it puts backs like Chris Thompson, Tarik Cohen, those pass catching backs can be much more valuable to you in a best ball in this format because of it being full PPR versus half PPR. And those are my thoughts. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, 100%. Just a quick note on kind of your mantra of not overdrafting a position. In a standard best ball, I completely agree with that. In a tournament setting like this, where you're looking for unique teams, you're looking for to leverage kind of the unknowns to put yourself in the best position to succeed, to beat 130,000 other people or however many are in each individual contest. I'll be more likely to stray from that standard kind of best ball draft strategy in order to build myself a unique lineup. Obviously it's riskier. You're not going to do that if you're drafting 5-10 teams. What I'm talking about is if you are maxing these contests, you have the opportunity to mix up your, deviate from kind of your biggest plus EV best ball draft strategy, if that makes
sense. Yeah, and I think we'll get into that with exposure, which we're going to get here to in a second. But I agree. I think, you know, if you do 100 drafts, you want to have, you know, I always say take 10 to 20% of your drafts and do something different, right? You know, whether it's going, you know, robust running back, even though I hate that phrase, or zero RB. But I'm doing a lot more late running back in this because of the format. And I feel like I can get away with it because of guys like Duke Johnson, guys like Jerick McKinnon, guys like DeAndre Washington, guys who, you know, you can get in the 13th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th round of these drafts who can, you know, give you points. You know, you want your backups to, you know, it's great if you get the backup who wins you the league. We all want, you know, I'm not saying don't take guys like that, but when you're thinking of your position group, mixing in one or two pass catching running backs out of the six, you know, those are guys who, you know, if they get five catches for 50 yards and a touchdown one week, and even if they don't, they can be your starter that week. And that to me is better than taking, a guy like Jamal Williams, who is more likely, even though he does catch some passes, has got two other running backs there.
Yeah, that's true in any standard season, and even more true for this year. This is definitely 2020 is going to go down as kind of the fantasy football year of survival, in the sense that you're going to need additional depth, and those guys are definitely valid depth pieces for best ball rosters.
Yeah, absolutely. And, one thing that I really like there is the fact that they have the famous tournaments that we know, the play action and the Millie Maker. So there's a $20 tournament, and just like its brethren in DFS, that's 150 max, and they kept the play action at 20 max. So to me, the 20 max is a very interesting case study for how to build your exposure. In general, again, for me, exposure in the year of COVID, you know, even in a tournament like that where it's, you know, 20 entries, I really don't want more than 30-35% of a guy. Your thoughts on overall exposure during COVID and in trying to do these tournaments? Last year in draft, I got 17 teams through in week one, but they were pretty similar teams with similar players. And when they didn't go off, I got eliminated from all 17 and didn't make it to week two. I think you really want to, we're going to have a big discussion on stacks, but I think all the more you want to mix up your stacks and your exposures, Mark.
Yeah, so that's kind of a two-sided coin for me, in the sense that I would break down, hold on real quick.
Well, what I mean by that is, you know, like again, 25, if you have a team you really like and you've got 25, 30% stacks with that team, you've got huge leverage on the field.
Sure. Yeah, 100%. For in a traditional sense for stacks, I would limit my exposure in the, if you're not maxing out, I guess, to say there, where I would, where the flip side of that coin comes into play is for the high leverage running backs specifically, where we know if the starter gets hurt, they are going to see additional run, or if the starter gets COVID, misses time, they're going to see basically jump into a high end RB2, RB1, you know, threshold. Darrington Evans, Chase Edmonds, you know, these guys where we know, you know, before the season, if the starter goes down or misses time due to COVID or anything happens, they are a high leverage play. Those are the individual players late that I'm willing to stay overweight on. And I think that is a game theory discussion in game or in variance, in the sense that you're leveraging the variance in your favor in a season where there's already going to be a high variance.
And that plays again into the fact that wide receiver early heavy make is what happens here. And if you can come out with four or five really good wide receivers in the first six rounds, you know you've got the core to where you should be able to put up three good ones every week if you're mixing your exposure up in those early wide receivers as well. And running backs, that allows you, you know, if I get out of round eight with two good running backs, you know, I know that that whole second tier, I can take four or five of those second tier guys. So that's kind of how I've been doing a lot of these. You know, if there's a running back early that I really like, you know, once in a while I'll come out of the first two rounds 1-1. But if you know, if Davante Adams is there at 7 or 8, if Tyreek Hill's there at 7 or 8, if Michael Thomas is still there at that point, I'm very likely to start wide receiver, and then third and fourth round, you know, you and I have talked about this already, how the wide receivers are better than the running backs in that area this year.
Yep, 100%.
And that allows you to, you know, then you get to the fifth, sixth round. The other position that I found really, really you can wait on is tight end. Kels and Kittle tend to go at the turn, at the end of the second round, beginning of the third round, and on from there. I mean, I've been taking I got Mike Gesicki in the 10th or 11th round in a couple of these, and even the 13th, 14th round, that Irv Smith tier is still hanging around. Sometimes Jarwin is there. I mean, I know it's not the FFPC, but that is pretty late for tight end. So if you have, especially if you're like me and you've played a lot of FFPC this year, you know, delay that urge to take tight end unless they're just completely the best guy that you've got on the board, because they're going to be there later. So that really covers exposure for me. Do you have a thought on the tight end?
Yeah, 100%. With this format, it's going to be highest EV to weight on both quarterback and tight end. And the reason I say that is after the top 3 to 5 at each position, respectively, those are the flattest positions. So if you do well in managing your exposure and hitting with those late round tight ends and quarterbacks, you have a better chance to leverage the field than the guys who are taking those positions early, especially non-tight end premium, and especially with the bonuses that we'll refer to later.
Yeah, well, and that it's funny. I was just about to go, Mark, it's now your turn to talk about the bonuses. So we haven't worked together in a while, folks. The importance of the bonus at 300 yards for the quarterback and 100 yards for other positions. Mark, talk about it in general. I've done a study. Mike Leone was nice enough to send me where you can find the top, you know, how many times each player hit that bonus last year. It's on Football Reference. There's a link. And but basically, you know, studying who did it, I think, you know, had some interesting surprises for me. But in general, how important, and especially in a best ball, where we always talk about spike weeks being important in best ball, nothing is going to help you spike more than landing that 300-yard passing bonus and a couple hundred-yard bonuses in a week, Mark.
Yeah, 100%. And what I will look at when hunting for those bonuses is the same team's defense and then the projected volume for the quarterback in question. There are really two late quarterbacks that stand out in this format as guys who could have a higher propensity than others to hit that bonus.
I know who you're going to say. Can I guess?
Yeah. I think.
Can I guess you too? Joe Burrow and Teddy Bridgewater.
No, you're actually both wrong.
Oh, wow.
The reason for Burrow, for where I would say no to that, is because we know that via the coaching trends towards the end of the year, we know that the offensive line was improving as well as Cincinnati's defense was improving. They invested additional draft capital and free agent acquisitions to both sides of the ball there. So in my opinion, Cincinnati is going to try and protect their rookie franchise quarterback a little bit more this year than what we've seen in the past.
So you're not on him this year?
Correct. I'm not.
I haven't drafted him much, but I know you've always been really high on the Bengals offense, so that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Who are your two?
My two would be Gardner Minshew and I got thrown off.
No, I don't know that quarterback.
Sam, that's a cool name. Sam Darnold, actually. So the Jets and the Jaguars attacking the
because
bottom
the defense
teams.
Is so bad.
Exactly.
I
attacking
think...
these bottom feeder teams that where we can project high weekly volume, and that's really all you can ask for at their respective ADPs.
The two guys who really surprised me in my analysis of last year isn't always an indicator of this year, but Matt Ryan led all quarterbacks in number of 300 weeks. If you take Julio in the second and Ridley in the fourth, I did this once today. You know, Ryan is sitting there eighth, ninth round. You then have that double stack. If you really want to get chippy, you can throw in Gurley in the third and Hurst, in like the 11th or the 12th. If you really want to go heavy on that stack, I tend not to go that heavy on the stack because I feel like if you've got five guys in a stack, all the best players, it's really rare for them to go off. But the other guy that I want to mention, the tight end who led the league in 100-yard weeks last year was Waller.
Mm-hmm.
He had 5 weeks where Kels and Kittle were both two or three. And you're drafting Waller four or five rounds after you're drafting Kels and Kittle. I thought, I just think a guy like that who's explosive, a guy that I've been interested in best ball in DK because of the 100-yard bonus is George Fant, because I think he's a real boomer bust guy. And I think, he breaks off one of those 60, 70-yard plays two, three times a year. He gets you that bonus much later. And, you mix him with other tight ends who are more stable. But those were the two, Mark, that in reviewing last year were a bit of a surprise to me. Waller having two more 100-yard weeks than anyone, and Matt Ryan leading the running the quarterbacks. And I think that goes to your point about how Matt Ryan did that because their defense was bad last year.
Yeah, exactly. So with those bonuses, you got to start looking at projected volume a little bit more and placing a little bit more weight on that. Because now you're talking about half a touchdown if they break those bonus thresholds at their respective positions. So, I mean, that's pretty big. And now you're talking adding PPR to the mix as well. And those dual threat running backs are really, there's no edge to be had because they're already going where they should be. But they place a little bit more heavy emphasis on those kind of dual threat running backs up top as well.
Yeah, I think that in general, Mark, you know, I've always been a big spike week guy at quarterback in best ball. Getting those 30-point weeks is, you know, because quarterback scoring is so flat, being able to put up weeks that are, you know, 5, 6, 7 points ahead of where that midline is that most quarterbacks get each week is very important. But I think with these bonuses, it really behooves you to chase guys who, you know, are boom and bust. Not a whole team of boom and bust guys, but I think, you know, if you're like, I always talk about risk like a cocktail, you know, and risk is the alcohol. I think, you know, a little bit stronger drink is in order in playing DK best ball.
Oh, yeah. And I'll add something. Just draft Big Ben. Just do it this year. Trust me, in best ball, just draft him. People just immediately forgot that his home road splits are the way that they are. And if he's healthy, he's going to win people a lot of money this year.
Yep. And we're going to get into stacks heavily at the end here. But, you know, again, one of the things about stacks is there's certain stacks that you might want that are hard to get. Like, I like the Cardinals. Everyone knows I like the Cardinals. You can take Drake in the first and Hopkins in the second and get Kyler in the fifth, but that's a lot of draft capital. You know, as we get into the talk in a minute on stacking, there's one thing I want to cover first, but in general, the Steelers, that's what I wanted to talk about. Ben is going late, like 12th, 13th round. You're getting Deontay in the 7th or the 8th, Juju in the 3rd or the 4th. And then James Washington is basically free. Ebron is close to free. I think the Steelers stacks are really, really exciting for these tournaments. So speaking of the tournaments, you know, Mark, what we've got here is the fact that you have 1 week playoffs, just like you did on draft. And so any thoughts on how to attack a progressive tournament like that?
Yeah, it's all about managing your exposure level, in my opinion. There's two kind of thoughts on where you should be, where your head should be at when you're thinking about your ownership levels and managing your risk associated with, especially not just advancing, but making those championship rounds and then how you're going to fare. Similar to like what you said earlier with 17 teams of your draft teams making it through and then none advancing past that first week. And one way to do that is to build various teams with varying late round stacks. And what I mean by those are the cheap stacks, right? The three that come to my mind, you mentioned the Steelers. And then it was leveraging those quarterbacks that I referred to earlier with the New York Jets as well as the Jacksonville Jaguars. Those are offenses where we can expect high weekly volume, and that volume is going to be highly concentrated. We've got, you know, with New York, we've got Mims nursing an injury. We know it's probably going to affect his start and a slow start. So really from there, you're looking at the quarterback, Darnold, and you're looking at Jamison Crowder. So the full PPR boosts his numbers pretty significantly.
And Herndon.
And Herndon, exactly. So those are all cheap guys where you can do a full stack, get three members from that team in probably, I would guess, the one that's going the earliest is probably Jamison Crowder. Probably, I don't know the ADP, probably in the 9th, 10th round in this format. Is that where he's going?
Yeah, right in that range.
Yeah, okay. So, and then probably Herndon after him, who I would guess would be going in the 11th and 12th, maybe a little later. And then Darnold after him. That's so juicy. So, yeah, stack that offense, get a full stack. You can go overweight the field with that stack because it's so cheap.
And don't forget Perryman.
Yeah. And Perriman's prospectus for this year was inflated when Mims, already with no rookie camp, OTAs, all that good stuff, now he's missing preseason camp. And we have no preseason games. So we know that Perriman is going to get every chance that he's going to be afforded every chance to kind of take that wide receiver two spot and run. Now, conversely, yeah. Looking at the Jaguars, again, super cheap stack. Minshew is probably going in the quarterback 22 to 24 range, somewhere in there. And you've got Laviska Shenault, who everybody from the Jaguars camp is raving about. Yes, rookie, but now we're talking about the risk with him being a rookie is mitigated by the fact that his ADP is so low. So, and then DJ Chark is probably the most expensive of that stack, obviously, probably in the fifth to sixth round turn range, somewhere in there in this format. So these cheap stacks that you can get, you can afford yourself the opportunity to go heavier exposure, kind of mitigate some of the risks associated with managing your overall stacks because of the risk with this year.
Yep. All right. So my number one strategy advice is to advance all 3 weeks is to triple stack. Okay. And you don't have to have a full stack for all three teams, but try and build correlations with all three of your quarterbacks. It's not going to happen every draft, but it's going to, I've done it now multiple times where I've got three, each of my quarter, you know, I had one with Kyler, Kirk, Drake, and Hopkins, Minshew, Shark, and then I took Chris Thompson and, you know, so I forget who my third quarterback was on that team, but I'm going into every draft again, where I normally say, don't, you know, drop a tier to do a strategy. When it comes to stacking these, I don't know that I would drop a full tier, but I will drop a half tier, right? The bottom of one tier and the top of the next. You know, like I just took Calvin Ridley. I had Julio in the second, and I wanted to get Ridley, and, you know, he never would have made it back to me. And I had two wide receivers, one of them Amari Cooper, and I forget who the other one was, who normally I would have drafted ahead of Ridley, but I took Ridley, I got Ryan, and, you know, that's my Atlanta stack team. And so I really believe, Mark, that trying to get three sets of stacks, that gives you three different chances each week of one, you know, that team has three chances now if they go off that week for you to advance.
Yeah, I like that.
Yep. And then the other thing that I'm doing is there's teams that you have to stack early, and there are teams that, like you have mentioned, you can get late. So you can draft normally for the most part early. And what I do is I only focus on one stack early. So whether it's the Cardinals or it's the Steelers, if you're lucky enough to get a Chiefs stack, I mean, one draft I took, Hill already went and I was on at the 12 and the, you know, the 12th spot. And I took Mahomes and Kels. Now Mahomes is going very early in these. He's going, you know, early, you know, I've seen him go in the first round. So I took him at 112 and Kels at 2-1. And that was my quote, you know, in the $3, that was my one Chiefs stack. And I was able to get Mecole later for that stack. There's a few other teams that are really good early. Any ones that come to your mind, Mark, on early stacks?
Yeah, you mentioned Atlanta. I like them again this year for stacking purposes. KC is going to be tough. So what I would do for kind of managing or trying to build some KC stacks is maybe go Mahomes-Kels. And then if you were still drafting that team, I would have possibly gone both Mecole and Sammy Watkins. In the off chance that something happens to Tyreek, now you have both starting wide receivers on the Chiefs. So kind of thinking about things in that sense and seeing how you can differentiate your stacks versus the field and kind of leverage a little bit of that game theory, the thing that I'm always rattling on about.
Yeah, the Packers, you could go Davante Adams and Aaron Jones early. I've got a lot of Davante Adams because I think he's going to have a big year. Rodgers is very cheap, so you can get him in a reasonable time. I've built one team with New Orleans, Michael Thomas early, added Sanders and Breeze. You could throw in Jared Cook if you want. I didn't. And then later, I mean, my favorite so far, you nailed, is the Jaguars. Because the other thing, I think we talk about this 19th and 20th player. I mean, to me, there's such dart throws there. Dart throw guys who are going to stack up. So with my Kyler, Kirk, Nuck, Drake stack, maybe I didn't have Drake on that one, but I had the two wide receivers and I didn't have Drake. I had the two wide receivers and Kyler. I took Eno Benjamin in the 20th round. I think Reggie Bonifon is an interesting guy in the 20th round. You really want to see, this is how you can win $1 million, is by having a 20th round backup who plays that week 16 and goes off with your stack that you really never counted on. And I'm looking at round 19 and 20, Mark, almost as a bonus round. You know, it's kind of like if you're doing a math problem and you throw in an extra column for sorting. So you get what I'm saying here, correct?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so I you know, and the Jaguars are easy to do that with. Dede Westbrook, Conley, Oliver the tight end, Chris Thompson. There's a lot of guys, you know, so if you don't have to build your third stack till late. Jimmy Garoppolo with Jalen Hurd and Jerick McKinnon. But build some, you know, as much as I can, I want to come out of every draft with three stacks, because in the playoff weeks, now we know stacking works in 1 week season, so to speak, and daily fantasy. Going into a playoff week with three different options for your stack to hit that week and advance you, I just think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I like that, and that's something that really I hadn't executed yet, so I'm going to throw that into the old bag of tricks. I like that.
Yeah, and again, there's guys, you know, the backup to someone who, you know, you might not have the starting running back for your stack, but having the backup running back with your, you know, who's the Steeler backup running back? That McFarland goes very late in these. Benny Snell is undrafted most times. You know, throw that guy in as your 20th round pick, your sixth running back. Pick a tight end, you know, who's a backup. So, yeah, that to me is really the key. So, you've talked a little bit about it. Let's just look positionally, Mark, at these positions. Who do you like more at quarterback in this format than regular season long and regular best ball?
Yeah. So I named the few earlier, Big Ben, Darnold, and Minshew. And then I don't know if I can like Teddy more than I already do, but he's still up there for me.
That's something I wanted to cover. Go ahead, finish up. Go ahead on the quarterback. Teddy,
nope,
I own.
You're good.
All right, so Teddy is probably my most owned quarterback in these. The one downside is, know when you're going into these Carolina stacks, and there's a couple other teams, I'm going to look them up in a minute, who have week 13 buys. So Carolina is one of the big ones that has a week 13 buy. And you're starting, you know, but it's great because I've started getting DJ Moore in the fourth round, and I have to believe it's because people are, you know, shying away from those guys because of the fact that they are. Tampa Bay is another team that has a week 13 bye. So you want to make sure that you're getting a discount on these guys because of that fact, because it does hurt you a little bit. But as Mark mentioned earlier, you have to get to week 13 to advance. And getting fourth round DJ Moore to me is a great way to do it.
Yeah. And you also have to think about, so one of the big proponents of game theory is everybody working with the same starting knowledge and then trying to solve a game. So that's really what game theory in a nutshell boils down to. So if everybody knows that week 13 is the first elimination round or advancement round, and everybody knows that there's two teams that have week 13 byes, and those players are slipping, I guarantee you not everybody thinks about the fact that there are going to be less teams that advance to week 14, the second playoff round, that have players from those teams on them, because it is going to be that much harder to advance in that knockout round with players from that team. So I would be more apt to go overweight the players from Tampa Bay and from Carolina, knowing that it's going to be harder for players or teams to advance to week 14 with players from those teams on them. The way that you mitigate that is, like we've talked about everything up to this point, with managing your exposure, triple stacks, all the different things that we've talked about of how to advance in the playoff rounds. So now you're actually giving yourself a plus EV, a higher chance of taking down $1 million if you have players from those teams, because there aren't going to be as many teams advancing to week 14 with those players.
Yeah. It's ugly, and I haven't done it yet, but, you know, Paris Campbell, who's that rookie for Indianapolis? Pittman and Phillip Rivers, that's a stack you could build late. If you really want a late, late mini stack, you could go with Goff, Everett, and Reynolds. And you figure that if you get Everett and Reynolds, most weeks it's either going to be an Everett week or a Reynolds week to be on the field a lot. And by having both of them with Goff as your third quarterback, who's going really late, he's going after Burrow, he's going after Tannehill, he's going after Minshew, he's going after Teddy in DK. I think that, you know, Bridgewater and Minshew are my two go-to late guys that I can stack, you know, because you can get Robbie Anderson, you can get Curtis Samuel late. We already did Jacksonville. But I really think that, you know, those are, Jimmy Garoppolo with Jalen Hurd, Brandon Ayuk. So you can, you know, don't stress too much about which third stack you're going to have till late, and just let the board come to you, would be my advice, Mark.
Yeah, 100%. And can I dive into a specific team backfield stack that I think nobody is thinking about?
Yeah, and in general, though, we've been talking about wide receiver tight end stacks. I'm a big believer in the best stack is a number one running back with the number one wide receiver and the quarterback. But go ahead.
Yeah, so I was invited to do this contest called the Draft Sharks Invitational, where they invited 60 people and did a small version of a best ball tournament.
Yeah, I was there.
And yeah, okay, yeah, tight. So we just I just did a podcast with them and breaking down kind of my draft in that format. And one thing that I did that I think not a lot of people are thinking about is drafting the RB3 through RB5 of the San Francisco 49ers. The reason I say that is we know, dear, that San Francisco preferred to have Tevin Coleman toting the rock or in the game first, because he's the bigger back, because he can wear down the defense. And then they bring in the late second quarter through the second half, they bring in these more satellite backs who all have the sub 4.3 speed. Well, we also know that Tevin Coleman has a thing called the sickle cell trait, where he is classified as one of the highest at-risk demographics for COVID specifically. With that, I actually did a little bit of investigative journalism myself, and I got Tevin Coleman's wife to respond to one of my comments on Twitter.
I thought that was really fun.
So she actually confirmed all the things that I was kind of saying, like, hey, like, these are human beings. They have families. Tevin Coleman has twin, I don't know if they're boys or girls, but he has
I think
twin
it's one
babies.
Of each, if I remember the thread.
Yeah, and they, who each have sickle cell trait, and it's like, at what point does the opportunity cost of playing football not make sense for these human beings? So I think Tevin Coleman, even though we're past the mandatory opt-out date, I think there's still a higher chance than, you know, with these other players that he might not finish the NFL season. And now we're looking at Jerick McKinnon, Hasty, Jeff Wilson, who are RBs 3 through 5 on that depth chart. But if Coleman opts out, if there's an injury ahead of those guys, like, we just don't know. So again, leveraging the unknown. And if you take 2 out of those 3 guys, there's a high likely chance, or there's a high likelihood, I think more so than other backfields, that you're seeing these week 14 or week 13 through 16 pop off weeks.
In the running back position in general, we've seen Keyshawn Vaughn right after the draft. He was going 4th round with the news that Bruce Arians, always trustworthy, always tells us the truth. Bruce Arians said Ronald Jones is the guy, and Vaughn going on the COVID list. He's now going in like the 12th, 13th rounds of these. I liked his tape a lot. Did you get a chance to watch him?
I did, and I also watched a whole lot of Rojo, because I knew that that was going to be, after Tom Brady went to Tampa Bay, the running back for that team was going to be in a high leverage position for fantasy football. So I studied that backfield pretty extensively, and I actually came to the opposite conclusion than you did. I know we've talked about this before, but you're on team Keyshawn. This was before he went on the COVID list, but I was team Rojo actually.
Yeah. And I can see it, but you know, my two concerns with Rojo are he's a bit of a head case, right? And people like that, you know, there's certain traits that you can improve on. Having mental, you know, deficiencies or and breakdowns. And he's not a good pass catcher. In Vaughn's tape, I think he's got some really natural hands. He's a good pass blocker. And what I like about him, and that I think Bruce Arians is going to like about Keyshawn Vaughn, is he gets the yardage that's there. Rojo runs hard, but he doesn't always run in the right spot. And I think that could drive Tom Brady crazy. Now, I wasn't drafting a lot of Keyshawn Vaughn. When they were even in the 7th, 8th round, I wasn't drafting a lot of either of them. Until I watched Vaughn's tape and really liked it. But now there's a 5-6 round difference between them. And, you know, we're talking about injury. We're talking about, you know, guys who could step in and do something. 13th round, Keyshawn Vaughn's a guy that I really like. At this point, you can like Rojo better and still draft Vaughn. Daryl Henderson is another guy who's dropped you know, that you can get really late in these. A guy I'm not drafting in these because he's not a pass-catching back is A.J. Dillon. I like A.J. Dillon a lot, but I think he really needs an injury. But a guy that I've drafted a lot of in these, I've always been a fan of his. And, you know, we've had this whole Clyde Edwards-Hilaire thing on Twitter. And, you know, but DeAndre Washington going in the 12th to the 15th round in these best balls, I mean, one thing's for sure is he's an injury away from a really great spot. He might not be the best running back in the world, but he averaged more yards per carry in Oakland than Damian Williams did in Miami. I think I remember you not being on DeAndre, though.
I was not, no.
All right. Any late running backs that the high low is on?
I named the high upside guys, the pure cuffs, a little bit earlier. You know, Anthony McFarland, Darrington Evans, Chase Edmonds, the guys that we can, with high confidence, expect to step into a feature back role. They're really, there's not too many more that we can have that high confidence level of them just stepping into what was vacated. You know, a lot of situations in the NFL are a little bit more nuanced and fluid, but I think those three we can project with high confidence that they might be a factor, a big factor this year.
At wide receiver, my most owned guy in all forms of best ball this year is James Washington. Big home run hitter, exactly what you want, being drafted so late that really if he catches three long touchdown passes this year, he pays off his ADP. He's got a lot of room beyond that. You know, we've talked about the Steelers stacks, but I think, you know, you don't have to have the quarterback to have a good stack. And there are drafts where I'll just put Washington with Juju or Washington with Deontay, I think is a great one. Washington with Ebron. But Washington and Deontay is probably my favorite that you can get pretty late. And they're very much correlated where, you know, one's going in the eighth round, one's going in the 15th round in these drafts. And if one of them gets injured, I know people talk about Claypool, but the Steelers tend not to, in general, play their rookie wide receivers much. I think James Washington is my favorite late wide receiver. How about you, Mark?
Depends how late we're talking, but Marvin Jones is one that in a best ball setting, you should be entirely overweight the field. We mentioned him, alluded to him a little bit earlier, but not really in depth. Rashad Perriman with the Jets. He should, you know, return value with ease kind of this year for his ADP. And then I do like the secondary and tertiary receivers out of Pitt, like you talked as well.
Cool. All right, tight end. For me, the guy that I'm always staring at in the 20th round of these drafts is Devin Asiasi. Don't know that much about him. Didn't watch that much tape, but we know about New England and tight ends. And, you know, he's the most likely candidate to, you know, be the guy who catches the passes, and he's going in the last round of almost every one of these. I mean, if he catches 40 balls as your third tight end and gets you 5-6 touchdowns, I mean, you've crushed the 20th round.
Yeah, I haven't taken much of him just because rookie tight end plus the unknowns and with COVID and stuff, but
which is why he goes on the 20th round.
Yeah, exactly. So I have no problem throwing those darts where if you think that there's an edge to be had there for sure. I really like Herndon to just absolutely annihilate his ADP. I really like kind of these not talked about enough volume tight ends where in a full PPR setting are a little bit more valuable than half. Guys like Jack Doyle, guys like either of the Minnesota tight ends at their ADP, who we can expect to be on the field together, you know, increased snap rate from last year. So
Rudolph is my most owned tight end this year. He's just entirely too cheap. As the third tight end, he is just way too cheap. He's too talented. A guy with Diggs gone to be going in the 17th round.
Yep. 100% with you. So those are probably the three that I would leverage the most, with Herndon, Doyle, and Rudolph.
So Mark, I know you've got some big personal news this year. Why don't you tell the people what you're doing and, where they can find that stuff?
Yeah, man. So the first of which was, getting the opportunity to write a little bit more than I had or contribute a little bit more than I had at 1 week season. So I'll be actually in next Friday, I'm submitting the course. I'm building a game theory course for JM at 1 week season. That'll be available on the marketplace for purchase. And I'll also be doing a weekly game theory article with respect to each individual slate, and that's for the main slates for the season. So that'll be over at 1 week season.
Well, I just got a comment real quick on that. That's going to make my study for our podcast so much easier.
Yeah. So that's, I think we're talking about releasing those late week, probably on Friday or Saturday morning. Those will, those weekly game theory articles will be up over at OWS.
And what else is going on?
Yeah. So I am a co-founder of a startup site called Fantasy Football World Series, or FFWS. And we are launching all kinds of good stuff this year. Everything from new formats. We're launching our quarterly format, which is you draft a team for a quarter of the season. And so, not to belabor this, but basically a 4 week season. We're also going to have season long contests that leverage the quarterly format, and you will draft a different format each quarter. And that'll be alternating from standard PPR snake draft, best ball, super flex, and then an auction format as well. So one thing that we're really, really trying to do over at FFWS is shift the focus from the game of fantasy football to the players of fantasy football. And we're kind of modeling that around, or something similar to what the World Series of Poker did to poker, circa the early 21st century, with shifting the game, the focus from the game to the players. And we have all kinds of exciting ideas of how we're going to make that happen. But we want to find the best players. We want to celebrate the best players and then build kind of a celebrity aspect to that. Shifting the focus again from the game to the players, making sure that they are found and rewarding them for that. So another aspect or component that we're building is the first ever season-long fantasy football leaderboard, and that will be released in a couple weeks. So again, there will be all kinds of cool stuff that will be associated with that leaderboard. I'm not at liberty to discuss those yet, but follow closely along because we'll be releasing those updates here shortly.
Well, I mean, I'm insulted you haven't invited me to play yet.
Hey, Todd, I'm going to invite you right on air, man. Would you like to come? Would you like to come play in our $10,000 buy-in rake-free invitational?
No. Absolutely not. If you do it next year and it's $1,000, you might get me. And that's a shame because, you know. And look, I think it's awesome, but I know that there's a lot of guys like me who think we could compete, but we just don't because we don't feel the need to put up $10,000. So I hope mid-level guys like myself, as you move forward with this, have a chance to shine. Almost, you know, here, I'm getting an idea as we go. Similar to what happens with, you know how soccer, like in England, there's the Premier League and there's 20 teams, and every year, I think it's two of them don't qualify to go back. The last two place teams, they get relegated to the championship, and the two winning teams from the championship get boosted up. You know, if you have a mid, if you have tiers like that, and the guy, you know, the part of the prize could be, you know, you get 1 year of getting boosted up the next year.
Yeah, so these are definitely, you're nailing it on the head here, Todd. Without giving away too much, I will hint at the fact that in 2021, the leaderboard is going to be a major share of everything that we're doing. So invites to the Invitational will go out via the leaderboard. And we will also have invitational mimicking events where you can play your way and earn a seat into the Invitational completely comped.
Just like, and just very similar to poker again, where you can, what do they call those, satellites?
satellite.
You know,
yeah.
where you can play a $100 satellite, and if you win it, you get into a $1,000 tournament. So it sounds like that's where you're headed. I know you can't confirm or deny that, but
yeah, we're going to have something for everybody. And again, our goal is to put the players first and take care of our players. So our game lobby for quarters specifically is going to launch here in the second week of September. And one thing that we're going to do to take care of our players is we're going to beat all of the competitors with respect to rake. And it is going to be a tiered rake approach, as evidenced by the fact that our invitational is completely rake free. And that's going to be a trickle down effect to all of our players. And we personally promise that none of our contest provider competitors will beat our rake. So we're talking down in the 5-8% range.
Nice. So does this mean you can't play DFS this year?
No, it doesn't mean I can't play DFS. Living in Arizona means I can't play DFS.
Oh.
So
all right.
I got to wait on that.
All the things you don't think of when your wife asks you to move to Arizona.
Yeah, well, that was my wife and I are both from Arizona. So when I made the family move to transition from active duty Navy, we kind of always knew that we wanted to come back here. So,
well, hopefully Arizona changes its ways and allows for fantasy for sports. Mark, always great. Any last thoughts on these DK best balls that you think we might not have covered?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the contests are there. It's good to see. I think this is a good thing for the industry as a whole with getting mass exposure to best ball, which is something that really we haven't had yet. You know, with the user base that DraftKings has established, getting all that entire user base introduced to best ball and playing best ball, seeing these big prize pools and stuff, I think it's a good thing for the industry. So I'm happy for them that they got it released, and hopefully it's just good things for the industry as a whole.
Yep. So to sum up, folks, make sure your roster construction is solid. 3-6-8-3 is the I would say the default. I wouldn't play around with twos in this format, especially this year. Full PPR with bonus, and the fact that it's a tournament, so that stacks are very, very important. And find different ways with those last two bonus rounds to differentiate your team, so that if you're lucky enough to make it to the last week, you've got a player on your roster that an injury could give an opportunity to that could win you $1 million. And that's going to do it for our show today. I want to thank my frequent guest, Mark Garcia at Hilo FF. I'm Todd from PA, folks, and we will see you soon.
See ya.